Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels. I don't like people necessarily, but today, myself and Sin City Steve get to talk to Royce Isaacs. And I'll tell you right now, Royce is one of the people I don't hate.
Biggest Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels. People I don't hate.
Hey guys, this is Merrick Brave with the Black and the Brave Wrestling Academy, and you're listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast.
So we're on the line right now with an absolute spectacular wrestler. It's sometimes you see people and you just kind of go, man, that person has it. And Royce, you have it, man.
Thanks, my friend. I appreciate that, man.
What is it that got you into pro wrestling?
You know, I'm not sure what exactly it was because I was younger and it was me and my dad watching it together. Like, I'm not sure what first stood out to me. But it's always connected with me. It's always just something that, like, maybe it's how my brain's wired or whatever, but wrestling just makes a lot of sense to me. From the start, I was all the way hooked. And I guess I'm also lucky because I'm 31. So when I was growing up was the Attitude Era. So I came into it at just the right time when wrestling was probably the coolest thing that it ever really was.
Who was your favorite at that point?
Oh, Stone Cold, duh, and The Rock, you know, like any good Attitude Era fan, those were my two favorites for sure.
I was so hoping you'd say something like Big Show or something like that, where it's just like, really?
No, I liked all the top stars. Mankind and Kane were also two that I was really, really into. But I mean, everyone from top to bottom is pretty damn memorable. They had some crazy talent at the mid-card level when you have people like, you know, Ken Shamrock and Steve Blackman and all that kind of stuff. It's like you have a wide array of talent, and there's a lot of people that you still remember that you're like, damn, like that guy did a really amazing job. Or people like Goldust who are still out there killing it on a consistent basis. But also, I mean, some of his stuff from back then was so, so underrated.
Yeah. Is there a particular memory that you have of either going to an event or watching a particular pay-per-view with your dad, since it, you know, really is kind of a bonding opportunity between father and son?
So this is totally not what you were originally going for, but I do have an answer for that question. I remember me and my dad did not usually buy the pay-per-views. I want to say it was one of the SummerSlams when I was a kid, and the entire pay-per-view we're watching, it's just, you know, normal wrestling, this, that, whatever. My mom has been in the other room not paying any attention. The second that she decides to walk in is when Sable gets her shirt ripped off and she just has the handprints over her boobs. And immediately she's like, what are you doing, John? My dad. And I have to pretend like this isn't the coolest thing I've seen in my short lifespan so far and bury my head in the pillows like, ew, boobies, get away. And like secretly I was like, what is this? This is great. I love wrestling.
That's awesome, man. And so now, obviously, you were hooked on pro wrestling at a younger age. Were you involved in athletics or anything like that as you were growing up? Or was it one of those things where it just kind of pro wrestling was it?
No, I was involved in athletics of various times pretty much all my life. It took me a second to figure out what my bread and butter were, but like I was a really avid a hockey and soccer player younger as a kid. I feel like I was really good at soccer, but I was more into hockey. I really liked the kind of the physical nature of it, and I loved watching, you know, going to live games and all that kind of stuff. And I was born in Connecticut, so like I remember I'm sure I cried before this, but the first time I remember crying was when the Hartford Whalers left Hartford. because that was like the only like real pro team that was ever in Connecticut. And you know, and then as I got older, in high school, I started football and amateur wrestling, and I carried that through. In college, I was a heavyweight wrestler, and I was a offensive lineman back in a previous life when I was like 285, 290 pounds. And I was more of like a bowling ball kind of shape back then, but I really enjoyed my athletics. I wish going back that maybe I had a little more like confidence in my athletic ability, because I think it's one of those things I didn't really realize until later in life, some of my athletic gifts. And part of that was buried under, you know, a few layers of extra tummy fat and whatnot. But part of it was just like mentality wise and whatever. I wasn't as sure of myself as I became later in life. And I think that, you know, at the same time, I do think it's given me like a good, well-rounded personality, in that I shouldn't say that I wish I could change anything, because it's brought me to where I am now. And I think that that mindset has benefited me quite a bit. And I'm glad. I think that being in sports for most of my life has really helped shape. Like, there's a lot of things in wrestling that like you just have to dig deep and really, you know, want it. And you have to understand how to be coached and how to listen to people. And I think years of being coached has prepared me for that, and years of having to push myself physically has prepared me for that. So I'm really lucky that I had such a long, I guess, amateur sports career.
Without a doubt, man. And so obviously kind of segueing from that into getting into pro wrestling, how did that come about, and where did you train specifically?
Yeah, so I went to a show in Denver, Colorado. They're still running. If you're in Denver, Lucha Libre and Laughs, I definitely recommend checking it out, because they have some pretty rocking stand-up comedy in between matches. It's like a really good like date night. Like, even if you're not like a huge, huge hardcore wrestling fan, like your girlfriend or your boyfriend or, you know, whatever, that doesn't necessarily dig wrestling will enjoy it, because it's just like a cool, in the middle of Denver, like get drunk and bring some friends and have a good time kind of show. Outside of that, so I watched that in person with a friend, and then afterwards I talked to the guy that was the promoter that was putting it on, and I was like, hey man, like I want to get involved in this, where do I go? And he directed me to the Butcher Shop, and I trained under Lonnie Valdez originally out in Denver, Colorado, and that was a really good experience. Lonnie was a really well-balanced trainer. He does definitely a high-flying like he does a million moonsaults, and they're all gorgeous kind of style, and that's not what I do at all. But he was really open to like just whatever's best for you and however you learn. And you know, I'm thankful for my time at the Butcher Shop. It was kind of crazy. I remember on my first day in at the Butcher Shop, so it'll be 6 years ago in April, I pull up, and this guy Bubba, who I thought was like an assistant trainer, but I guess he was living at the Butcher Shop. Shout out to Bubba, he's a sweetheart. But he was standing out front because his damn truck had gotten stolen from the Butcher Shop. Like, I was in front, like right where I was basically parking. And I'm like, do I really want to do this out in this warehouse in Adams City? But I did. I was like way into it, and or Commerce City, excuse me. And I was way into it, and I was hooked. And immediately I was just like, how do I make this my damn job? Because like I said, I just found that thing that clicks, you know, like it's just like, oh, like this is what I want to do with my life. So from there it was just, you know, off to the races and trying to make wrestling happen. You know, here we are 6 years later, and I'm with the NWA and one half of the Wild Cards and a part of Strictly Business. And it's really cool, man.
Did you in school,
that's awesome.
Did you in school ever, or, you know, at any point ever study acting?
No, I never did. I just, any talent or lack thereof is all kind of just stuff I've picked up.
And I know recently You had a chance to go to Second City Hollywood. What was that experience like, brother?
Oh, man, it was cool. If you're in the LA area, I definitely suggest you check out some improv, especially from people as talented as Second City. The connection was actually made through Ryan Nemeth, Dolph Ziggler's brother.
Yeah.
He's a really, really good dude. He's really friggin' funny. He's ultra talented, and I hope that Ryan gets the just due that he deserves this year, because he's done some really cool stuff. He has a movie coming out that I have an extra role in. It's called Heel. I'm not sure exactly when it's coming out, but it should be later this year. And yeah, Ryan does it all, man. He's a really good dude, and I'm really glad that I've met him and made that connection.
You know, you're such a personable person. Have you thought that, you know, and seeing what Ryan's done, what Dolph has done, what some of the, you know, retired legends have done, have you thought about trying your hand at possibly doing either stand-up comedy or doing some kind of improv like at Second City?
You know, if you search far enough, deep enough into Facebook, man, it must have been like 3 or 4 years ago, but there was this thing in Denver called, the Nerd Comedy Roast or something like that. And they would have like a theme. And I did twice. I did stand-up comedy dressed as Tommy Pickles. Like, one, I was roasting other like 90s cartoons characters. And the other one, I was just roasting like the all-stars, like up just various, like they picked one or two from each one to bring back. And, it was super fun. I really enjoyed it. It's one of those things that I always wanted to try out some kind of comedy or stand up before, you know, it was like a bucket list kind of thing. It was an amazing rush. It was super fun. Like that said, I do think, you know, wrestling's my thing. Like, yeah, Wrestling's what I've wanted to do. That's why I haven't really gone towards the acting side as much. Even though I live in LA, like it's not something that I've really tried to pursue as much. I want to be a wrestler, and I mean, I'm always open to stuff. I've done a little bit of acting stuff, and I was on an episode of Shark Tank last year. Like, I've done some stuff that's different and out there, but at the same time, wrestling is the thing that, you know, scratches my itch, and wrestling is what I'm after. So that's where like my first priority always goes to.
Most definitely, man. And so one thing that really stands out for me is, you know, many people are saying that tag team wrestling itself is having a bit of a renaissance period right now. In the last year, I mean, you've held tag team championships in the NWA, in FSW, and in Defy. How do you feel about helping to honestly lead that renaissance?
Hey, man, I'm all about it. I think that tag team wrestling is a beautiful art. I think when well done, tag team wrestling is, you know, some of the best stuff you could possibly see. Like, obviously, you know, the Young Bucks would probably be like the number one team that you'd have to point to towards that renaissance. And I think that, you know, you look at their style of matches and the work rate that they're able to bring to the table every time. And then you look at teams like, you know, like an LAX or whatever, who's continued that lineage, and like the Rascals, and, you know, I'm honored that I've been able to, you know, continue along with that kind of stuff. And I love tag team wrestling. Tag team wrestling doesn't get its just due sometimes. I feel like, you know, it's hard for tag team wrestling sometimes to, you don't see a lot of like main event tag team kind of stuff. And I think that's a shame, because I think that tag team wrestling can certainly be in the main event. I think that tag team wrestling deserves solid, cohesive storylines more than just, well, this team is feuding with this team now. Like, no, like it should, just as much as, you know, a one-on-one feud deserves some kind of deeper storyline. I don't think there's any reason why a two-on-two feud can't get that same kind of juice. I think that a lot of people shortchange themselves in terms of that. So I would like to see it continue to have a resurgence, and I hope I can stay, you know, at the forefront of that kind of movement.
One of the questions,
most definitely, man.
One of the questions I have on that is, do you think, because of the way that some of the younger guys getting into the business now are being trained that it's hard enough for them to learn psychology as an individual, let alone applying tag team psychology. Is that kind of one of the reasons that, you know, you don't see as, you know, I mean, when we were growing up, you know, in the 80s, of course, you know, the Road Warriors and the Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express, you know, you can go on and on. And even in the Attitude Era, you had your Hardys, Edge and Christian, you know, APA, etc. It doesn't feel like there's that type of connection right now. And is that just maybe because of the story writing, or is it because it's just, you know, just not people learning the same psychology that was employed years ago?
I think it's a case of both. I think on one hand, obviously how things are booked and how things are treated are going to also reflect on how things are perceived. Like you look at the same thing was true with, like, I would say, like the NBA before Michael Jordan came along was more of a team sport thing. And then Michael showed that you could be more of an individual thing. Not that he didn't have big Dennis Rodman fan, big Scottie Pippen fan, all that stuff. But, you know, he showed that you could play a little more like one-on-one ball, or what would be called a hero ball or whatever, and make that work, continuing on with like a Kobe and whatever. Like, and now you've seen a renaissance of more of like a team style, you know, with like the Warriors and whatnot. I feel like it's one of those things where with wrestling, you saw the rise of a lot of singles competitors specifically that were really hot. And it was, you know, if something's presented in a certain way, like, I hate the, these two single superstars are going to beat a tag team thing. Like, I think a tag team should probably win that every time because they're an actual team versus someone that's, you know, not a team. That's my own personal feeling. So I think part of it is, yeah, like it's like the booking and how it's presented, because how we present things to people are really going to be how they end up feeling about that to a certain degree. You know, like, yeah, there's a thing as like fan pushback on something that's force fed and whatever, but you have so many years of tag teams kind of being treated on the back burner or whatever. It's going to, you know, come off that way eventually. I will say that as a tag team that I've main evented numerous shows, and I've always felt like I've been able to bring a level of entertainment, physicality, and, you know, everything else in between that I've never had one complaint about, like, oh, that tag team main event or whatever. It was like people were psyched for it. So I think it's all about how you present it, and how you treat it. I will say that in addition, and this is psychology wise for everything, but like it is a tag team thing. You know, I picked up things here and there on the psychology of a tag. I think there's people that just never learn it, that never understand it, or don't do enough tag team stuff to really learn it or teach it to the people that are coming up under them. If you're a teacher, if you're teaching at a school, you should understand tag psychology of like even little things when it comes to like how to make like a hope spot work without shitting on the fact that, you know, If the guy on the team on the defensive can run around and do all these spots, why wouldn't he just make the tag if he's getting beat up in the middle of the heat? Like, there's always ways to work around it and still get your cool moves in and whatever. And this isn't like a rally against people who get their cool moves in, because I love doing moves. I enjoyed wrestling because I love moves are cool and I love doing moves. And you can always find a way to put something in there and make it, you know, have a really good high entertainment, high work rate match. Just people get lazy sometimes with their psychology, or they don't understand the psychology of how can you do this without, you know, shoot reversal, whatever. It's like there's always a way around it. And I think also it's nice to sometimes go back to old school psychology and watch how they, you know, how the baby face and the heel interacted, how the heel fed for the face, and how the heel cut off the face, and how the heel played into, you know, the hot tag or whatever. And I think sometimes some of that gets lost, but I would say you can blame people who are training just as much as people who are not picking stuff up, because it's a two-way street.
And do you think,
most definitely,
do you think too, off of that theory and philosophy, you know, we just talked about Second City, which is an improv company, that one of the things you learn as an improv actor is the way to successfully do it is employing yes and. So if someone says, hey, it's raining outside, you would respond, yes, and my car just got hit by that tree that the lightning hit, and it's making me sad. And then someone, you know, the next person would be, yes, and, you know, so and so and so forth. And that seems like, again, with, you know, implying it into storytelling and wrestling in the psychology, it's, you know, your most successful matches is when you're able to work off of each other where you're giving and taking, and it's that yes and feeling. Do you think that, that part of, you know, some things that happen nowadays is that when people get too absorbed into just doing spots or moves and not really understanding why the hell they're doing them, that that's kind of what, you know, takes away from what can make, you know, a good match become a great match.
I mean, yeah, that's certainly part of it. I think it's also a matter of, like, you know, some people don't understand the spot that they're in or the role that they're given. Like I said earlier, I love Stone Cold. Stone Cold was, like, my favorite wrestler of all time. But when you have some shows, at some point you see, like, 35 people all trying to be Stone Cold. And it's like, if we're all Stone Cold, no one's Stone Cold. Right. So you have to understand, like, there may be a certain show where, like, the guy's like, hey, we're putting the rocket on you. You're our top guy. You are our Stone Cold. No one, you know, you're bumping everyone. You're the man. And that's fine. But you have to understand in certain shows, like, you're, you know, the tag team opener. And so don't be Mr. Stone Cold. I'm going to shit on the face by being a heel that's too cool, or I'm going to shit on the heel by also having, like, way too much of an edge in me, or whatever it is. Like, you could have the best match you possibly can have in the second slot without having a main event match that shits on everything else, I think. I think there's a time and a place for everything. Like, I think you should always be trying to have the best match you possibly can. I think you should always be trying to outdo, you know, both yourself and the other people on the card, but you can do that without being, you know, selfish, without eating other people up, and without destroying pops for, like, later matches or whatever. So I think there's a balance. But, you know, other people are going to have different opinions on me, and I'm not like the be-all, end-all. That's just kind of how I feel about it, I guess.
Most definitely, man. And so, obviously, in the NWA, especially lately, you've locked up with the Rock and Roll Express a couple of times. How was your experience working with arguably one of the greatest tag teams of all time? And kind of circling back to something that you had just mentioned a little bit ago, was there anything that you were able to pick up from them when you were working with them so closely?
Oh, I mean, I would say there's nothing arguable about it. They're definitely one of the greatest tag teams of all times. I think their resume says that, their longevity, the fact that they've done and been so many places. They can still go, man. It's insane how they are still that talented and they're still that damn good. And yeah, I've certainly, there's a lot of things that you learn wrestling a team like that and realizing, you know, wow, like, this is what makes them special, and this is how they've managed to have such long careers together. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really helped me and Tom, who, I mean, in April, it'll been a year that we've been tag teaming. So, you know, it's like we're kind of on, like, the opposite ends of the spectrum, where they've been tagging for so many years and we've been tagging for a year, but now we're, like, really starting to put it together, and it's, like, almost like, you know, like boot camp for how to be a dope tag team.
Hell yeah.
You know,
most definitely, man.
With that being said, in terms of being a dope tag team, you've, you know, had some great experiences with tag team wrestling. What do you think is the biggest difference between going out there and being a tag team wrestler and being a singles wrestler in terms of having the audience react the way you want to get them to react?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
So, like, the difference between tag team wrestling and singles wrestling in getting the audience reaction that you're looking for, what's the biggest difference between the two?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's kind of the same thing. You just want to do something that's meaningful and impactful, and getting in terms of getting a crowd to react, you just need to be good at your job, have a presence to you, and execute things well. The fact is, if you have two people in the match, you can get a great reaction. If you have four people in the match, there's no reason why you can't incorporate all four and get an even bigger reaction, at least in theory. So I don't think it's reinventing the wheel. I think it's just conceivably, if you're smart enough, you can have an even bigger wheel.
And is there something that you like that you can accomplish as a tag team wrestler as opposed to a singles wrestler in terms of being able to play off that audience, whether it be getting more heat because you're able to, you know, do a spot where the referees distract it and you guys are able to double team or, you know, do more dirty things? Is just like, is there things that are easier to accomplish when you have two of you working together on the same page and then four of you essentially working together on the same page?
I mean, yes and no. Like, if you're in a singles match, you can certainly draw the referee in other ways. Or if you're a tag team that also has like a manager, now you have three people, there's even more to it and whatever. But like, at the end of the day, it's just like you're an artist with an even bigger brush, conceivably, where, you know, makes it a little easier to paint the strokes. But the strokes themselves, you know, the art itself is, you know, either you're good at it or you're not. And you figure it out and you figure out what works for you. I don't think it's as in depth or as crazy as it maybe seems like at a glance. You know, obviously you have more to play with when you have someone that can easily, obviously, you know, grab a ref's attention or hit someone illegally or whatever that is. But it's, you know, it's all gravy to me, man. I have a long singles career. I have a long tag career. And I mean, the biggest thing for me that I enjoy being in a tag team is I can, catch a breather on the apron.
Most definitely. And so kind of shifting gears a little bit here. Is there anything that our listeners would be surprised to know about Royce Isaacs?
If you really, really follow me, I don't think this would surprise you, but if you're just maybe hearing me for the first few times, or you've just seen my work in a wrestling ring, I'm a huge true crime nerd. I've been that way since I was like in early high school. I have, literally, I'm staring at my room right now, the Encyclopedia of Serial Killers, and The Man from the Train, which is another true crime book. I'm really into serial killer stuff. I'm really into mafia stuff. Like, all that is like really, really interesting to me. So if you have any true crime nerds, feel free to reach out to me. Actually, I also got if anyone's familiar with Nico Claw, he's a German artist. I have a portrait of Ted Bundy, of all people, that one of my friends got me for my birthday. So it's one of those things where, like, my close friends know I have kind of this brand now. So I get all these, like, really creepy gifts that are, like, kind of – but it's like you wouldn't guess that. Looking at me, you'd think, like, oh, here's, like, this dumb jock. And it's like, yeah, but, like, I got this weird true crime side to me too, so – So that's lovely.
have you gone to the murder museum? Because I know it's fairly close to, you know, where you are in LA.
Brother, have I gone? I've only gone like four times in the two times I've lived here. Plus, I've gone to the one in New Orleans.
have you gone to Zach Bagans' museum here in Vegas?
No, I haven't. I've been meaning to. The problem is, even with all the shows that I've done in Vegas, it was pretty much always like in and out of town. Or even if I was staying the night, it was like late night, get out to early, you know, early in the morning, go to my next thing or whatever. So I haven't really gotten the chance to. I know there's also like a mafia museum in Vegas I'd really like to go to. But I just haven't spent like an extended period of time chilling in Vegas yet.
Yeah, you need to... you know, take like a 3-day trip, you know, and of course, you know, when you're not busy, you know, but
yeah. I would also really like to check out the, it's called the Heart Attack Grill.
Oh yeah,
And I like on a cheat day, obviously, and just pack on the calories. That would be really nice.
Well, you won't be disappointed with the Mob Museum is head to toe spectacular. It's really a fun time. And it'd be right up your alley, brother. You just, you know, and they got the distillery downstairs now too, which is kind of cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, you do the three floors of the museum and then you end up in the basement and you can have some of their hooch that they brew there.
That's what's up.
Yeah, man, definitely. So let me ask you this. Obviously, it's become a trope of asking people that are wrestling who your dream matches are. But is there anyone that's not on an AEW or WWE roster that you have, that you would want to get in the ring with?
So the only qualifier is they can't be with WWE or AEW?
Correct, yeah.
Let's see. I'm a big Japanese wrestling fan, and even though he's not active, he's had some injuries, I would say Katsuyori Shibata.
Yes.
This one's way more far-fetched because he's been retired for years, but Kenta Kobashi. One that would be a little more realistic would be Shigehiro Irie. He's got an extensive career and he's doing a lot of stuff with WXW. Konosuke Takeshita, also from DDT Pro. Trying to think of who else is around that's not signed up right now that I'd actually really enjoy mixing it up with. I guess we'll keep it to that. There's a lot of people obviously that are also on those rosters I'd love to have crossover matches with. And I think that realistically, one of the bigger crossover matches that that we could have would be me and Tommy having the rubber match with Brody and PCO since we're tied up in this 1-1 right now.
Yeah, man, that needs to happen.
yeah, definitely.
So, you know, you got a chance now to take your talents to NWA and Power, which is definitely one of the, I'd say probably the best program on, you know, pro wrestling right now out there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. What has it been like to get that opportunity? And was it, how did you get into the NWA? Was Dave Marquez a part of that since he had a relationship with him, with Championship Wrestling from Hollywood?
Well, so basically, I met Billy and Dave Lagana briefly a few times when they had come to Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, at the tapings and whatnot. And then I had reached out when I'd heard about the Crockett Cup to Dave Lagana, and that was kind of the start of everything of me working with them. And then obviously, you know, being at the Crockett Cup was my first event with the NWA. So. Man, it's been a wild ride. Sometimes it feels like way shorter than a year. Sometimes it feels like it's been like way longer than a year or two. It's like just been everything's changed so much, and I've enjoyed really every second of it. So I'm blessed to be a part of the NWA team, and I think we're doing some really special stuff, and I think the fan response is showing in kind.
The work that you did with Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. What was it that kind of gave you that opportunity? Because I think that for me, that was one of my first times really getting to see you as a singles wrestler. Was that something that just kind of evolved, or were you brought in there under just, you know, being able to do singles wrestling for the company?
I wrestled for Championship Wrestling from Hollywood for a bit before the NWA deal, obviously. And all my stuff with all my stuff with Championship was pretty much single stuff And so I had an extensive career there as a singles wrestler. I was brought in specifically to be a tag wrestler with the NWA because Crockett Cup was coming in and it was coming up, and that's when I was coming in. So it was a mix of obviously my experience in that studio style doing championship wrestling from Hollywood, but also with my my partner in the 1%, Jarrell Nelson. We had a highlight tape that I had sent in, all this stuff. So I had experience both in the singles and tag team wrestling, and obviously that's shown now because I have both a singles and a tag team storyline going on with the NWA. So
right.
I think it's been a really good balance for me, and I'm glad that I can do both, that I'm so versatile, because I think that's an art that not necessarily both people are able to do. It's like being like a switch hitter in baseball.
Right. That's mm-hmm. that's a great way to put it. And you know, that's kind of nice that you've gotten that opportunity. Do you think that Jarrell is, you know, prone now to, you know, he's, looks like he's kind of getting a little bit of that same opportunity to kind of work a little more singles. And I mean, he's a great guy and he's a great wrestler.
Yeah.
Do you think that eventually we might see your paths kind of coming together and there might be, you know, a chance for you guys to work against each other?
Man, I would love that. Jarrell is one of the best unsigned talents out there right now. I think he's a great dude. He's one of my best friends. We still train together from time to time. We still just hang out. We watch the Super Bowl together. Like, it's one of my best friends. But the old saying, you know, like, your best friends always make your best rivals. I think we've had a few matches, if you search on YouTube, that we've had against each other before we really started tag teaming as heavy. And I would love to lock horns with him again, because I think we bring the best out of each other, obviously as a team, but I also think we bring the best out of each other against each other. And, you know, I hope that Jarrell gets his just due as a wrestler, because he is that talented. And if I can wrestle him and help, you know, some way be a part of that, I think we can make some magic in the ring for sure.
Now, growing up in growing up in Denver, you know, you said the word Super Bowl. Are you a Broncos fan?
Absolutely. I think we have a shot at being something special this year. We'll see how Drew Luck turns out in his second year. Obviously, like, the sophomore slump tends to be a very real thing with quarterbacks. And once people have some footage of you and whatever, but I like his swag. I like his confidence. I think he's got a good arm. I think that LA finally got one right as far as an actual prospect. So we'll see how that turns out. Funnily enough, actually, John Elway's son, Jack Elway, was my quarterback in high school.
Oh, really?
That was a fun journey for sure. I would like to see the Broncos do well. They just picked up AJ Bouye yesterday, which I think is a really good pickup as far as their secondary goes. I think that their defense still has some of that elite talent in there, and if with a little more offensive support, which ideally that's what Drew Lock is going to give them, I think they could do some big things this year.
Yeah,
I mean, Lock looked really good last year, especially. So, I mean, if he's able to continue that into this year, it's you're right on the money. I think that you guys could have a really good season, and you know, obviously, you've got the Super Bowl chance in the division, but I think everything could work out for you guys, and you could have an impressive showing for sure.
For sure, man. Hell yeah.
What was it like having a son of a legendary Hall of Fame quarterback, especially in that town, you know, playing on your team? Was there any extra, like, insanity or pressure, you know, from, you know, not just being like high school kids, but, you know, having Elway's kid?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I can't imagine growing up the way that he did and the situation that he was in and having all that pressure on his back. And, I mean, he was a really nice kid. At least I didn't keep up with him after high school and whatever, but back then he was really nice to me and he was really cool. And, I mean, we had a really good team. I want to say my sophomore year, we made it all the way to the state finals, and then we lost in the finals. And then after that, made it back to the playoffs, but never were able to get super, super far. So, I mean, it was tough, man. We were in a tough division. We were in 5A, like the biggest division. Yeah, there was always a lot of pressure on us. Cherry Creek High School is like a really big, the high school that I went to is a really big high school with a lot of crazy, good athletics. Like, I think my senior year, like our overall athletic program was like considered like fifth in the nation because we had such a crazy good, like lacrosse, tennis, and, swim team and stuff like that. And all of our other teams were really good. So, I mean, yeah, man, it was pressure all around, but, I miss high school athletics for sure. It was a good time.
Growing up in the Denver area, are you a Coors Light person?
Oh, you mean that Colorado Kool-Aid? I mean, out of the crappy beers, I will drink Coors Light the most. But, I mean, there's better stuff out there to drink for sure. I would probably rather just drink like a mixed drink or something like that if I'm going to do something. But out of, you know, like Bud Light, Coors Light and Miller Light, I think that Coors is clearly a step above the others.
Yeah.
But that might be my Colorado bias showing.
what is playing on your oh God, I'm going to sound like an old man, on your iPod when you're in the gym nowadays?
Oh, well, on my vinyl record player, I like to, I mostly listen to, like a lot of rap, a lot of stuff from like the 90s and thousands. I like a lot of Cam'ron. Denzel Curry is one of the new guys that I've been kind of into, ASAP Mob. Let me see, what else have I been listening to? Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of rap, like underground rap, Copyright, self-titled. Self with a C, all that kind of stuff. But like, I'm kind of all over the place. Like, I'll listen to whatever. I definitely have like a crunk playlist that helps me get through some like heavy leg days where I'm just like, yeah, ignorant music, let's go, baby. So I don't know. I have a varied interest.
And
without a doubt, man.
Who's your all-time favorite rapper?
Probably Copyright. It's Copyright, like Copy. Write. He's from Cleveland, Ohio. He's like an underground guy, but I think he's pretty freaking amazing as like an actual technical rapper. His ability is up there. Yeah, so that's definitely got to be that's probably tops for me. But that's like a really random. Like, most people probably haven't really heard of him. Not to be all hipster about it. I sound like a hipster there. But, like, I like mainstream big guys that really made it, probably someone like Cam'ron.
And, you know, being in L.A., I love that you said hipster because, you know, just makes me think.
Surrounded by him?
Yeah, it makes me think of good old Silver Lake and, you know, the good.
I mean,
old...
I'm in Sherman Oaks, so.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I was in Valley Village, so I was on the.
Right. Okay, yeah, right nearby. Oh, yeah,
exactly. Is there any places that you like to, you know, frequent in the Valley, or do you spend a lot of your time? Well, I mean, again, when you have free time. You know, do you spend it
on the rare occasions? I got you.
But do you spend it in Hollywood as compared to, you know, like chilling out in the Valley, maybe, you know, catching a movie over, you know, in Sherman Oaks there at the, what was the, what's the theaters over now my being gone for a couple of years, I can't remember a damn thing.
Dude, Vegas has just wiped your brain, brother.
Yeah.
The cool thing, being in the Valley, I'm right nearby the Sherman Oaks Castle Park.
Yeah.
Which is like a dope ass. Like, if you've ever seen Good Times, it's the place where they play putt-putt. Like, they play Keenan or Cal, I can't remember which one plays like putt-putt with like Carmen Electra there, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
They have putt-putt there. They have batting cages. They have an arcade because, you know, I'm a damn child, so I like to itch my gaming itch every once in a while there. And No, there's some really good like Thai places. Like Krua Thai is right nearby me, so I go there quite a bit. Me and Bateman from Ring of Honor go to the Pancake Factory in North Hollywood, because that's not far at all either. And on that food tip, Porto's Bakery is in Burbank, and that's really delicious.
Yep.
So no, there's a lot of cool stuff around here. It's easy to get around to, but like honestly, I tend to be a pretty like chill, like night in guy when I do have free time. Like I'm chilling on the Netflix or I'm watching some wrestling, especially bad wrestling. I love watching bad wrestling. It's funny. you know, cause it's like I'm out there, I'm working out, I'm active. So sometimes at the end of the night, it's easier just to kind of chill out. Although I do think I'm going to try to catch an XFL game here pretty soon, because it's only like less than an hour away. And it's pretty cheap. I'm trying to do some of that.
And it's also pretty damn good quality football. You know, I mean, if you want to compete with the NFL, that's probably not the way to look at it. If you want to watch like guys who, it's equivocable to, you know, watching NWA. You know, you're looking at a good product with guys who have all the talent in the world. It's just that they're not signed to the big dog that, you know, pushes their product down everyone's throats.
Yeah, man. No, I think there's a ton of talent there, and there's people that are really hungry for their spots. And like one thing that you certainly have to say for Vince McMahon is he knows how to present a product, and he knows how to make something feel important, and he's done a really good job with that. And I think all the rule changes have been really cool, and I really, really, really would not be surprised to watch the NFL adopt a few of them, just as they adopted the Skycam last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Now, one thing that you mentioned just kind of in passing was your gaming itch. What kind of games do you like to play?
So currently in the arcade setting, Harpoon Lagoon is my jam. If anyone's played that, it's a game where you shoot fish with a spear gun or whatever, and like there's this big shark that you can like try to pick off, and it's worth a bunch of tickets. Back in my like actual like nerdy gaming days, I was a big RPG fan, especially like Japanese RPGs. So like Kingdom Hearts was one of my favorites. I also like some of the like the shooter games. Like Fallout was always really fun, and BioShock is probably one of my favorite series of all time. I think some of the stories in BioShock with like the twists and everything are like some of the best stories just in general in gaming. Oh, and then back to JRPGs, I got to give a shout out to Suikoden, because that series was like always really cool to me. I really like Shenmue as well. So I was like really like, I like the games that you have to like ingest in like hundreds of hours of game time just to like really sink your teeth in and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Without a doubt, man. And I think that it's really important that, you know, you mentioned sinking a lot of time and investing into a game. I think that there's a direct parallel with that in the world of pro wrestling, because, you know, yes, you're going to see great matches and things like that, but if you don't develop an emotional attachment to the characters, then you're not going to invest the time into the product at that point. So
yeah,
I always like to draw that kind of a correlation between video games and pro wrestling.
Absolutely. It's all storytelling, man. Entertainment is all storytelling.
With that, you know, kind of in mind, is there a particular story that you would like to see yourself involved in? Is there something that you've ever thought of, like, hey, you know what, this would be kind of cool for my character?
You know, it's not necessarily like, I think it's more like you find another, like a foil, someone that opposite with you that you can play with. It's hard to already just have something necessarily in mind. Like, I want to build like a casket match. It's like, it has to be appropriate for like your character and the other person or whatever. Like, I think it's one of those things that it should evolve naturally via the dynamic of the two characters. So it's not something that I necessarily have, I guess, invested a lot of time into worrying about. I'm glad that, like, I thought that me and Bateman having the Bull Rope match, championship wrestling from Hollywood, they got super bloody and gory.
Yeah.
Made a lot of sense for the time that it took place. I think that me and Andy Brown having a ladder match, championship wrestling from Hollywood was really well built too. And like, was a, you know, we executed our angles well and, all that kind of stuff. It's, there's not necessarily like a lot of, I guess angles I've thought about that I'd really like, oh, I need to be involved in this, that, or whatever. It's just one of those things that as you go along, it should kind of like develop naturally. I think that, like a good example that's currently going on, like I love the storyline angle with me and, Sal and, May Valentine. I think that's a good fold to my character that he has this kind of jealous, paranoia to him.
Yeah.
And I like, getting to show off that side that I haven't before, at the NWA. So I think it's more of like an organic interaction between two people and how these people would hopefully interact in real life so that you get that kind of feeling or that sense of some kind of relatable, oh yeah, this is what that is, whatever, you know?
How are you enjoying working with the lovely May Valentine?
She's great, man. May's really talented, and a lot of people don't know she's done a lot of stuff outside of the NWA. She's a published author and journalist and all this other stuff. So, like, no, she's a killer, man. It's been really cool to be a part of her coming into wrestling and her growth from that.
And it also lent it to some wonderful Valentine Day pictures. I thought those were pretty
funny. Yeah, they were cute, right?
Yeah, that was a great idea. If you see yourself, wrestling for, let's say, the next, 10 years or so, where do you want to see your career headed to?
I mean, right now, the only thing I'm not worried about 5 or 10 years from now. I'm worried about me and Tommy getting the tag titles back at the Crockett Cup, winning the Crockett Cup. I think that's the next logical step. Like, I don't want to get too worried about the forest where I can't focus on the tree that's right in front of me.
Sure.
Obviously, all the accolades that I could possibly get and all the money that I can possibly make is the best for me. I'm not a dummy or whatever, but it's one of those things where I'm not trying to get ahead of myself. The biggest challenge is always your next challenge. And it's like, I'm never content at the same time. So it's like, once I get past that challenge at the Crockett Cup, it's like, there's obviously going to be another mountain to climb. So that's where I'm at, man.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, anyone who's listening and wants to, follow you or get in touch with you on social media, what are your social media handles?
So I am at Royce Isaacs on Instagram, at Royce Isaacs on Twitter. Obviously, I also have to plug NWA Power every Tuesday on YouTube. Check that out. And if you haven't gotten your tickets yet to the Crockett Cup, April 19th in College Park, Georgia, it's going to be a freaking banger. I'll say that every single time the NWA has come out, we've under-promised and over-delivered. There's always cool surprises, always like dope little Easter eggs for fans and all this cool stuff and, historical, people coming back and new faces and all this stuff. And I don't think Crockett Cup's going to be any different because it's our biggest show that we've even, had so far. So thank you for all the fans that put their faith in us. I hope that, continue to do so. So visit the NWA YouTube channel, visit the NWA website. Get your tickets, all that stuff. And if you're interested in a wild card shirt or a Royce Isaacs shirt or an 8x10 or a pin or anything like that, holler at the DMs. Check out all my matches on YouTube and whatnot. And anyone that's listened to this, I appreciate your time and hopefully you got something out of it and enjoyed it.
Awesome, brother. Well, we appreciate you, man. Thank you very much for your time. And on the final note, my final question is, were you a Smashing Pumpkins fan before you went into NWA?
Yeah, man. Like I said, I'm 31 now, so
like the era that I was growing up in with the Attitude Era was like the Smashing Pumpkins, you know, rise in their era too. So it's been really cool to work with Billy Corgan. He's a really good dude. But yeah, like I grew up in that era where that started to get popular. So it's weird, that's crazy that happened, but it's really, really cool that happened kind of thing.
Yeah, that's amazing. I can't be happier to hear, you know, that you're having a good time and that your success is, you know, propelling you forward and that you're taking it one step at a time, man. And, you know, we're 100% behind you, brother.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that conversation with Royce Isaacs. Make sure you turn into NWA Power. It is by far one of the best wrestling programs out there. And I'll tell you right now, after talking to him, and you can tell why, Royce is definitely one of the people I don't hate.
Biggest Bad Boys of Podcasting.